The ancient Egyptians had a story. It was a story that they wrote on the walls of their tombs, and a story that they painted on the inside of their coffins, a story that they wrote on papyrus scrolls that today we sometimes call the Book of the Dead. They actually had a number of different names for this collection of stories. One of my favorites is the Book of Coming Forth by Day. And in the Book on Coming Forth by Day, it's the story of the soul's journey to find an afterlife for itself after it leaves the body in death. The ancient Egyptians, a lot of people think of their culture as being one obsessed with death. The truth is, they were obsessed with life. They were so obsessed with life that they couldn't bear the thought of leaving it, really. And they created an afterlife that was really a lot like this one, but better. And so once the body has died, the soul goes in search of a new life, a life that's going to be permanent and better and without the threat of death. It's not an easy journey. There are rivers to be crossed. There are monsters to be faced. Finally, the ultimate trial that the soul must face is an actual trial, a trial before an assembly of the gods who are going to judge the soul and determine if its life has made it worthy of living on or if it deserves eternal destruction. And if you win at this trial, you're going to be granted basically an eternal paradise. They had a bunch of different ideas on what eternal paradise meant, but some type of good thing was going to happen to you. And if you didn't win at this trial, there was a monster that I think was something like one-third lion and one-third crocodile and one-third hippopotamus that was waiting right by the courtroom to devour your soul. No pressure. And first you would make your case before the entire assembly of the gods and explain that you'd committed none of the crimes that they would seek to judge you on. You would lay out the evidence of your life. And finally, you would call forward as a witness your own heart. And your heart would be placed in the scales to be tested against a symbol of truth to see if that you were sincere. And if your heart balanced properly, then, you know, again, you got paradise, and if not, you were eternally destroyed. And I love this story. I think there's so much to unpack in this story. Because I think that the trial, the idea of the trial, is something very fundamental to us as humans. I think there's something about it that's just ingrained in our psyche. I don't know how or why, but I think the trial is just something kind of wired into us. And this story really shows that. It shows this idea that, you know, it shows the kind of link between the trial and the divine, this idea, and you'll see it in a lot of ancient cultures, that the gods are sitting in judgment, that the trial is something that has been kind of given to us by heaven, where mankind must sort of stand in the dock and be judged by the gods. There's the idea that you can plead your case, and I think, you know, that's a very fundamental human urge, the idea that you want to tell your story, you want to have, that's even the figure your speech for it today. In English, we say you want to have your day in court. I think everyone has that desire to explain themselves and justify what they do and have that accepted by their community. And the trial, in many ways, is the embodiment of that. And you see that in this story, the idea, you know, of society and the gods sitting in judgment, the idea that there are these laws outside of ourselves to which we must conform, the idea that we will be tested on whether or not we conform to them. But the idea that we can also speak on our own behalf, that we can defend ourselves, that we can, even kind of the lowest of us, can speak back to the court and make our case and testify. It's a really powerful image. Then the cynic in me, and for those of you who don't know me, there's a lot of cynic in me. Get ready for that. But the other thing I really love about this is the ancient Egyptians not only recognized that the trial was this kind of mystic and divine thing, they not only, you know, understood the fundamental need of the human to explain himself, but They also understood that the system's kind of rigged, because the book of coming forth by day and all of the kind of similar volumes that they had are collections of spells that let you do things like trick the judges. They're spells that let you... Well, first, the whole thing is a script that tells you exactly what to say at your trial and exactly how to play the courtroom. And then, you know, there's spells that let you threaten the judges. If things aren't going your way, you can threaten to eat all of the gods, which is, you know, that's a bold claim to make, but, you know, you can kind of intimidate them into ruling in your favor. And, you know, at the final moment where your own heart is brought in to testify about your character, and, you know, this is kind of the one perfect witness, there's even a spell that lets you silence that witness, that lets you kind of bind your heart so that it can't testify against you. The ancient Egyptians were many things. They were not fools. They knew how the world worked. They were people who had seen the justice system in all of its glory and all of its squalor. And, you know, the most delicious crowning irony of this is, of course, that the Book of the Dead, the Book of Coming Forth by Day, all of these other things, they were expensive. Commoners didn't get a coffin painted with the Book of Coming Forth by Day, or a copy of the scrolls of the Book of Coming Forth by Day, you know, to put in their tomb with them. Commoners got thrown into a shallow grave in the desert. Noblemen and wealthy merchants, I guess what we would kind of call upper middle class, these people were the ones who could get copies of the spell book that had all of the cheat codes to win in your trial in the afterlife. Because hasn't there always kind of been one form of justice for the rich and another for the poor? And isn't it, you know, just a delightful image that the Egyptians made even their judgment of the gods reflect that? So anyway, yeah, I love this image of the Egyptian final trial of the spirit and all that it says about the trial and how we view it in our society, how central it is to how we see the world working. You find the trial, you know, I am convinced that when we huddled in caves around the fire, back when we were painting woolly mammoths on the walls of our caves, we were having trials. Hard to prove that, but you can show that there have been trials, you know, as far back as there are any records. If you look at the Code of Hammurabi, which is our oldest, you know, legal text of any type to come down from the ancient past, there are provisions in there for how to deal with lying witnesses. So, you know, this is a problem that was old when Babylon was young. This has been something that we've experienced all throughout human society. I love, and I'll probably be covering this at some point later in the show one day, but I read this kind of saga. It's like a Viking-type saga about a court case. And you find that, you know, the savage, barbarian, raider Vikings, who you kind of think of them, you know, just wearing their horned helmets and swilling down mead and pillaging villages, have an incredibly complex legal system and experts. They have lawyers who are experts in the legal system who conduct trials against each other. You'd kind of think all of their trials would involve someone grabbing an axe and challenging someone else to single combat. But they had a complicated legal system based on arguing before a court. And then if things went wrong, you all grabbed axes to settle things. But, you know, you had both. There was the two wheels of the cart of their justice system was the carefully worded legal argument and the berserker charge with the axe. Some people that I know in the legal process today think that we should bring back the berserker charge with the axe just to balance everything out. This is such a fascinating part of the human story to me, and you get such great human stories when you look at trials, because they're really such a dramatic moment in people's lives, and the people that you see brought to trial, the people whose stories you get caught up in, and the drama of their circumstances, this is incredible and powerful stuff. There's a reason that we have great movies, and I'm sure many people have seen, say, 12 Angry Men, which is just a brilliant movie and takes place in the jury deliberation room after a murder trial. You know, there are so many great plays and movies and novels that center around the trial because it's such a crucible of humanity. I'm a lover of stories. I'm a lover of history in part because I love stories so much. And the stories that you find in trials are so compelling, and that's what I want to tell in this podcast. A little bit of background on me. I have spent several years as a trial attorney. I did a lot of criminal defense work, especially right out of law school. That was kind of how I was able to cut my teeth. I've done a lot of trials, not as many as I would like to do, because trials were, you know, really what drew me to practicing law. They're a lot of fun. And trial attorneys are kind of a weird subset of lawyers. A lot of lawyers have nothing to do with the courtroom itself, and the trial attorneys are very proud of themselves for being the ones who actually get in there and fight out the legal battles. But yeah, that's why I always loved, that's what I really enjoy. I'm kind of on a hiatus from law for the moment. I'm what some people call a recovering attorney. But I can't get away from the stories and the drama of the courtroom. And so, like an addict returning to the bottle, I'm kind of going back to my favorite stories of the trial and trying to explore them and see what it is about them that's so important to our human experience. I'm going to be picking trials based on the very important criteria that they're trials that I like and find interesting. I am very much a narcissist. You'll pick up on that pretty quickly if you listen to me for any length of time. So I'm picking these stories based on what I like, and I'm going to be giving my own views on the story. I will be looking at different sources, and one of the great things is, especially for trials in the past couple of centuries, but even going back into the medieval period, with trials you often have transcripts, you have original documents that you can view. And as much as possible, I'll be looking at that, and I'll, you know, be looking at different sources and different historians' takes on things. But at the end of the day, you're going to get everything filtered through me, and I'm not a historian, I'm not a legal expert. I'm just an aficionado. I'm just someone who is passionately devoted to the subject. I'm an enthusiastic amateur, at least on the history side of things. I guess, you know, on the conducting trials, I'm a former professional. But I'll be telling the stories. I'll be trying to put out a podcast on roughly a monthly basis. We'll see how well I can stick to that. And here's a warning for you. You're going to get my stories warts and all. These are going to be rough and imperfect. And I apologize for that, but there's a reason I have to do it that way, and that is, I am by nature a perfectionist. I know that seems a little bit contradictory, but see, the problem is, once I start trying to fix things, I redo it and redo it and redo it, trying to get it perfect, and if I let that habit take over, then it will take me the next 50 years to produce episode 2 of my podcast. In fact, I've already created what's going to be episode 2 now after this introduction, and I kept redoing it and redoing it and making it better, and one day I just had to tell myself, the perfect is the enemy of the good. I've just got to put this out here so I can start working on the next episode. There are going to be some times I misspeak. There are probably going to be times I get dates wrong or get things a bit muddled. I hope I'll get better as this progresses. As much as possible, try to ignore my errors and enjoy the story, because while I'm an imperfect storyteller, these are really great tales and worth looking at. And I'll try and put up on my blog and author's notes different sources that I looked at. There are going to be a lot more sources than I can see. So, you know, for a monthly podcast, I cannot spend 8 or 9 or 10 months researching every episode. So there's going to be a lot more material out there. I'll try and point you towards some other interesting things. But I hope that if this is your type of thing, that you'll enjoy it. Final word of warning, these are going to be podcasts on the longer side. I like my podcasts long. I'm used to having to make long commutes and things like that, and I like to be able to put on one show and just keep it playing. I know there are some people who like shorter podcast episodes. I may do those from time to time, but just pause as necessary as you go through these. Anyway, I am looking forward to the trip, and I hope you'll join me. Thanks.